the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
Financial advisors have shied away from cryptocurrencies for years, largely because of the uncertain regulatory environment. But that's beginning to change with the arrival of institutional players like BlackRock and Fidelity moving into Bitcoin exchange traded funds. Many of these players are incorporating blockchain into their operations. It's clear, therefore, that there's a thaw in the institutional attitude towards crypto. Financial advisors are likewise warming to crypto, in part because of pressure from clients who see the extraordinary gains in Bitcoin and Ethereum and other cryptocurrencies potentially passing them by. It's no longer sufficient for advisors to dismiss crypto as a scam as they've done in the past. That line has been worn to death over the years, and a more nuanced approach is clearly in order. Well, we tracked down fund manager and macro strategist Jean-Jacques Widmeyer to see how financial advisors and fund managers now see the crypto market. Jean-Jacques, or JJ as he's better known, is a financial planner, chief investment officer, and co-founder of Green Era Financial based in Florida in the United States. Hi, JJ. It's good to talk to you and thanks for giving us your time. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your background in fund management, and how you got into crypto.
It's good to be here, first and foremost, and it's a pleasure to be on the podcast. I'm one of those people that's notoriously bad at talking about himself, so I'm going to do my best here. So I'm 42, so I've been around tech most of my life. I have five older brothers. One of those older brothers, he's fabulous at computers. He started putting together computers, I think he was like 9 or 10. So that's given me a really wide breadth of knowledge that I kind of like obtained through osmosis from him. But besides that, I've always been interested in finance. I think I got very interested in finance when I was about 8. I grew up very poor. My dad, who's originally from Haiti and then moved to the United States, when he was like about 17, 18, through joining the Air Force, he took me and my brothers to Mexico. And I was like, I don't want to go to Mexico. Why do I want to go to Mexico? I want to stay here. He's like, well, in Mexico, you're going to be rich. And I was like, what? Like, how is that possible? And he's like, well, there's these things called exchange rates. And as soon as he started explaining exchange rates and the interchange of value between countries, my head kind of exploded. And I was like, wow, this is cool. How can values be different in different places? Right? My world kind of exploded right at that moment. And that's when I first started getting interested in finance, actually. So as I grew older, I was very entrepreneurial. I graduated high school early, started my first company before I was 18. It was actually a painting company with one of my best friends. And I've had three other companies before this one. Some of them did well, some of them did great, some of them did horrible. And that's how those three went. We're doing really, really well here at Green Era, so I'm extremely happy about that. So probably when I was about 20, right, 2021, so this is almost 20 years ago, I first started, I think I saw an article and Bitcoin was about a dollar a coin, somewhere around there, right? Don't nail me to that date. But that's when it first ran across my plate. And I had other friends that I talked to about finance, about trading, about macroeconomics, about, you know, the banking system here in the United States, about us being the world reserve currency. You know, we were really, really into that. And those were like kind of all of my friends. You know, I did go out and have a couple of drinks, but most of the time that would lead to me and my friends talking about finances or exchange rates or cool things that we were learning. So I've always sort of really found my niche in this area. What led me into portfolio management, right? Is that I used to work at one of the largest consulting agencies for financial advisors in the United States. And I started working with them about 2013, somewhere around there. And my job in the beginning was just to call these financial advisors, do surveys, learn about them. And what was so interesting is that these were all the financial advisors in the United States who had survived, you know, after 2008, 2009, because there was a giant exodus, right? And so these were all the guys that survived. I'm like, how did you survive? Some of them saw it coming. And I was like, there's no way. Everybody said that there was no way to find out that this thing was coming. That's how majority of them that were doing really well, they saw it coming. It wasn't just, you know, one movie or with five or six guys that saw it coming. There was actually a lot of people that saw it coming. And so that got me very interested in how they saw it coming, which really introduced me to macro finance, watching inflows and outflows, primarily capital coming in and capital going out of funds of the United States, things like that. Got me really interested in bonds and how what we call the yield or yield curve of bonds indicates certain things that happen in the economy. And that was extremely fascinating. And when I joined that company, I wanted to be a financial advisor. So I was very interested in asking them all the questions on how they did what and what made them successful and how they became successful and all of those different things. And that got that was probably the first crack in the framework of brainwashing to some degree that you have when you walk into any specific industry, right? There's generally like this PR kind of filter over what a job is. But as soon as you start seeing successful people and other people, you start to see the cracks in it. And so it was introduced to me very early that there were things that you could do in managing people's finances to avoid large scale downfalls. So to speak, that kind of crack that occurred really is probably what has also influenced my general interest in any type of asset or any type of information that's kind of against the grain, so to speak, right? So after I left that consulting company, I became the managing director at a large firm, a medium-sized firm in Orange County. It was an RIA, what we here in the States called a registered investment advisor. And over the period of about 5 to 6 years, 5.5 years, I became the managing director of that company and was really instrumental in all of our decisions that came to what investments we were making or what investments we were selling or what investments we were recommending. Over that period of time, I was probably instrumental in investing about $100 million between the stock market and annuities and insurance products and things like that. I left that company. I joined a really big bank for a little while that didn't sit well with me. And then I met Carrie, my business partner, and we started Green Arrow Financial about 2.5 years ago. Or almost 2 years ago. Sorry about that. So my primary role here is really to do a macroeconomic look every month at what's going on in the United States. That's where I specialize. And then allocate our portfolios based off of that. So at least from this point forward, if I make any comments about investments, obviously I'm not telling you to make those investments, right? Investments take place with a financial advisor who's doing financial planning and they're specifically for you. I have to say that as a disclosure. And so any of the recommendations I might or things I might say going forward, these aren't recommendations from me.
All right. Thanks for the intro. Interesting background. Now, so in the introduction that I made, I did mention that financial advisors are warming to crypto. Is this your understanding of it? Why do you think that's happening? Is it because of the launch of exchange-traded funds, or is it because client pressure? These clients are seeing the extraordinary gains in Bitcoin and Ethereum and other cryptos. They want part of it.
There's a multifaceted answer to that, okay? So I think primarily it has to do with age groups, right? As in my generation, there's probably more pressure to be able to have investments that are in crypto. As you get older, people tend to be, or the retired groups which we work with, they tend to be a little bit more off, not as interested in it. They tend to still shy away from it to some degree. So there's that, right? So that's one piece of it. The second piece of it, at least here in the States, is that when crypto first really started booming, that was probably about 5 years ago, at least I feel is when it started going through some type of adoption. The ways that advisors could charge and make money and pay their bills by investing people in crypto was, I would say, very, very limited and very sketchy, okay? And so that was a huge shy away from the general advisor investing your client's assets in crypto, right? I believe that was a massive, massive wall. As time has moved on, I believe that the ways for advisors to provide crypto as an investment within portfolios for individuals now has really gotten a lot better, a lot more secure. And that's also, as I would say, adding in different ETFs that advisors can use. Because if I add a Bitcoin ETF into a portfolio, or an advisor wants, a client wants to invest in that, we can do it through an ETF and we're getting paid. So that's a huge part of it. It's difficult to, as a fiduciary, recommend a client who is not technically savvy into an investment that is, you need to have some technical computer savviness to invest in, right? Like, as a fiduciary, to tell a client, hey, you want to invest in crypto, I can't really do that for you. I want you to go into learn a whole new technology to do so. You could lose your money as by having a wrong wallet or losing a password or something like that. So that was really a lot more of it. I think also probably the end of this is that Coinbase here in the United States got FDIC insurance. And Coinbase also got hacked a long time ago, right? And they paid back everybody. So it was huge. I think that also happened with NiceHash. I think that might have actually been NiceHash, not Coinbase. So correct me on that. But that would be my answer. It's become easier. Advisors can get paid for it. So I think that that's lowered down the barrier to entry for most individuals here in the States.
You've done pretty well as a fund manager. You've outperformed the S&P 500. You specialize in non-correlated returns. Now, that's quite interesting. And of course, crypto fits very snugly into that positioning. But I'm quite keen to hear about this non-correlated aspect. You mentioned that in your previous role, you were phoning up financial advisors and a whole bunch of them had gone bust during the 2008 financial crisis. And those that survived, what did you find out about them? You know, what made them sort of crash proof, if we can say that?
So I think those are, you know, two parts to the question. I'll try and answer the first one in regards to non-correlated assets. I really like, and this could be, some people don't like him. I like him. I love Ray Dalio. I love the way he looks at things. I love the way he presents data. He does give an opinion. Sometimes his opinion is spot on. Sometimes I don't like his opinion. But the way he presents data is beautiful. And he has had some funds that provide extraordinary returns, right? In almost every single market, I guess you could say market condition. He also predicted the 2008-2009 crash, okay? Ray Dalio is the fund, was the head investment officer for an extremely large hedge fund called, I think it's called Bridgewater and Associates, okay? So following his kind of track record and information, he introduced me to non-correlated funds. There's a great video on YouTube, and if you look it up, it's called Ray Dalio's Secret Sauce, okay? And he specifically breaks down that if you have different asset classes, right, those asset classes must be almost completely different from each other. So if you look at right now, the U.S. stock market is 80% correlated. That means that if we just threw a dart and picked a stock, right, 80% of the time, it would correlate with the S&P 500. So if the S&P 500 went up, that stock would go up. If the S&P 500 went down, that stock would go down 80% of the time. So what became really, really, really interesting was if we could find different assets that weren't correlated or had low correlation, but also over time went up, right? So if you have two of them, people tend to do this with stocks and bonds, but they're more correlated now than they used to be, right? If you could have two of them, then you could get more return for the amount of risk that a client is taking. If you have three of them, you get even more return for the amount of risk that a client is taking. We're seeking almost five, okay? At five, if they have no correlation, you're getting twice the return for half of the risk involved. And if you just want to quote that, you can look up the video on Ray Dalio's Secret Sauce. He goes into it more in depth. So that was first and foremost kind of what really piqued my interest. I was like, wow, I can get way more return for the amount of risk that's happening for clients. This is incredible. And that's what really got me into it, because my job is to safeguard people's money and grow it. Right? It's not just grow it. And if the market goes down, then, you know, nobody could find out. Nobody knew that that was going to happen. That's just not an excuse in my book. So that's what really got me into it. I'm not going to go over like our secret sauce, but we're generally looking for five on a diversified portfolio. So to kind of address the second part of that question, which would be, you know, we have performed extremely well for our track record so far. We do use as many non-correlated assets as possible in our diversified portfolios. Our growth portfolio has, it depends on how much I can say regarding regulatory purposes here in the United States about our performance. But we have, you know, I could say that our performance has been very good. Then there's that piece of it. The third piece, when I was talking to these advisors while I was at Bill Good Marketing, and the guys that survived, they were using a type of technical analysis, all right? And technical analysis is generally when somebody is trading a particular stock or ETF or mutual fund, and they're looking at certain movements of an underlying holding, whether they're going up or down, and then a pattern that they create, okay? So that pattern, when you're trading stocks, they call technical analysis. This was a separate technical analysis created by a guy named Dorsey Wright. And it had to do with inflows and outflows from the U.S. economy, particularly, right? And if there were certain outflows that were happening, you could see these outflows before the market opened. And so when these advisors saw these massive amount of outflows and how the outflows were occurring and using technical analysis on these outflows, they knew that there was going to be something big happening. And so they started moving out of equities and out of bonds. So that was one piece. The second piece was something that we called the yield curve here in the United States, but it's across every type of bond, right? And generally, it's a healthy curve where the start of the curve is low and the end of the curve is high, right? So it curves up, all right, on kind of an incline. Now, if that curve is no longer there and it actually inverts, and instead of going up, it's actually going down, on the 2 to 10 year treasuries of the United States, this has been a historical indicator that a recession is going to occur. So this has been a historical indicator for, I think, 60 or 70 years. And they also saw that occur. So they saw that occur. Then they saw these massive outflows that were occurring on the technical side. And that's when they knew to pull out. They didn't know what exactly was going to occur, but they knew something was happening and they decided to pull out. And that's what protected them.
Okay, now let's talk about the markets as they are at the moment. This last year, 2024, it's been a pretty good year for financial markets generally. Donald Trump winning the presidential election, it's kind of lit a fire under the markets. Broadly speaking, how are you positioning yourself for next year, for 2025? What percentage of client funds are you planning to invest in crypto?
So looking at 2024, we had something in the States called the Magnificent Seven. And don't quote me on this, but it was something like 80% of all the gains in the market over here. Okay. So that helped, that really, really is what produced the gains in the market. If you took out the Magnificent Seven, the market was flat.
And that Magnificent Seven, of course, is the likes of Apple and Amazon, the big market.
That's
caps.
Right. That's right. So if you took those out, we were flat. Now, moving forward, looking at 2025, I kind of parcel this out into quarters. I don't really know what's going to happen after first quarter 2025. Obviously, I'm not giving anybody investment advice on what to pick or what to purchase. But the Trump bump here in the United States is real. It's an absolute thing. What I've looked at primarily is tariffs, right? That's a big thing that people are talking about here. My outlook on tariffs is that Donald Trump is setting an extremely high negotiation anchor, right? He's telling everybody, I'm going to charge you 100% tariffs or 25% tariffs. And in any negotiation, you're going to set a really high anchor, and then you're going to work it down from there. And that's what I see happening moving forward. So I'm not as on guard until those tariffs are somewhat final. Okay. And the markets tend to move very quickly. So what will happen is that everything will be great until an actual real tariff comes out, and then the markets are going to adjust. And I'd be poised to look at those adjustments. I think U.S. manufacturing has hit a Trump bump definitely and will continue to outperform its previous movement for the last year or so. So we're looking at it there. When it comes to crypto, particularly, I do use ETFs, crypto ETFs. I primarily use Bitcoin because I feel that Bitcoin's singular value statement is that it's a holder of value. It's made. It's an investment vehicle, and that's what it is. There's a lot of other things that you could say about it, and you add them all in, but when we look at it, it is a holder of value, and that's what its proposition is. So I use that primarily as my investment device. The SEC here, the new chairman, is extremely crypto-friendly. There are some policy changes that we'll see. They want to massively increase, actually have a holding of crypto here in the States. So I'm very bullish on that long term, right? Bitcoin is extremely volatile. But when you're looking at a long-term growth cycle on Bitcoin, it's a fabulous asset. We tend to not expose any one single client to more than 15% of any one given holding. So our holding of Bitcoin will never go past 15% in an individual portfolio for one of our clients. It might in my personal portfolio, but never for a client portfolio. So we would be anywhere between that. We have held Bitcoin somewhere around Q2 of last year is where we started holding it. And then we increased our holdings of it so that we're not in any one single portfolio over 15%, but we have been increasing our holdings on it because I think it's going to do well.
That's interesting. I get the sense, you mentioned it quite explicitly, you're pretty conservative with client funds. 15% might be quite high, but yet, your performance, your track record in investment would validate what position you just outlined. But you're far more aggressive in your own personal portfolio. And when we spoke previously, you told me about that. So just talk about that. Why are you more aggressive? Is it because of you're in the age bracket where you can afford to be a little bit more loose with or less conservative?
All of those things, a little, right? It has to do with I really understand risk. I'm very understanding of it. I know exactly what I'm getting into. I know exactly the time horizon, and I have an appetite for it personally. So that's one piece of it. The second piece of it is that I have a portion of money that I do play with, and I have to learn, and I have to get hard knocks. I'm not going to learn on client money, so to speak. Do you know what I mean? There are particular types of assets that I look in and I'm kind of dialing in on. On my personal portfolio, I do hold crypto. I also tend to look for companies that are going bankrupt. And I look at their underlying assets. A lot of times their underlying assets will be a massive amount more than their market cap, right? That's if you add all of their shares together and the value of all of their shares, the market cap might be like 10 million and their assets might be like 80 million, right? So I know no matter what happens with that over a longer period of time, that's going to likely crush. That's something that I'll do. But that's not a client investment whatsoever, right? I might, dollar cost average into Bitcoin quite heavily, knowing that it's going to be extremely volatile. But I know over the long term that this is likely going to pay off for me, So there's things like that that I do. I personally for myself, and it's because I'm very close. I watch it actively. I'm learning, but also clients have a risk tolerance, they have a goal, and they have a purpose. So I try and stay within their purpose and their goal and be a fiduciary to them.
All right. Okay, a final question, and just very quickly, JJ, if you could, what should we be looking out for in 2025? You probably touched on a few points. Trump coming into office, tariff wars, if we can call them that. Manufacturing looking pretty interesting in the United States. Maybe give us a brief summary.
My major concern for 2025 is that not only is there going to be a tariff war, there's going to be a twofold, okay? One is a cultural war that's taking place between massive fund managers, okay? You've got this group of individuals that are very pro-America, and you've got a group of individuals who were likely in power that were very, I would say, un-America first. And those individuals, the way the United States is positioning, or the way Trump's and his cabinet are positioning, is to really get rid of those individuals, okay? I believe that's going to cause, when those things do happen, that's going to be a lot of overreaction in the markets. So I'm going to be looking for overreaction. And instead of being weary of anything, I look primarily for the opportunity it presents. When I'm like, oh no, there could be something bad, that's an exact moment in my mind where I'm like, where's the opportunity in this for our clients? And where's the opportunity in this, obviously, for myself? So I think that's going to be one big piece of it. The second piece is dependent on how interest rates are going to change. We're likely to have a cut in on the 18th here in the United States of about 0.25% basis points. That's likely to occur. If they decide to keep going down, I think it's going to be extremely unhealthy for the United States, especially with all of this change going in place from DOGE and this new administration. So I'm actually watching that as much as possible. But otherwise, the United States, if you look at the large-term trends, is that we're doing quite well. There's something called an M2, which is the money supply of the United States, and that's been trending upwards. There's something called real M2, which is our money supply adjusted for inflation. And even though our inflation numbers have been high and that is also increasing. And then there's another thing called M2 velocity, all right? And that's how money moves back and forth between people and how fast things are getting purchased and moving around in the economy. And that's also been increasing. So I'm very bullish on the next year, but I think there's going to be a lot of overreaction that we're going to be looking to take opportunities on.
Fascinating stuff, JJ Widmeyer. Thanks very much for joining us on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast. And we hope to talk to you again in 2025 to find out how these markets are actually playing out.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.